T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
I look at this list and I realize that the Cubs are trying to do something here that might be uncharacteristic for them. It's the Bernstein and McKnight Show, middays on Sports Radio 670 The Score. If you're just joining us, the Bears news of the day, just to make sure you are informed, is that the Bears have QB2. Their backup quarterback this year, he is a career backup quarterback. He is a cottage industry of backup quarterbacking, Chase Daniel. 2 years, $10 million, $7 million guaranteed. He has started twice in his eight-year NFL career.
All right, let's do the platitudes, right? You ready for the platitudes on backup quarterback, QB2? Seems to know the system, close with Matt Nagy, gets the whole idea. He's been around. He helps move Trubisky into the new offense.
Good for the room.
Oh, good for the – that's right. Good for the room.
Got to have good for the room.
Great for the room. Helps out our young wide receivers. We're bringing in some others, you know, this season.
And continuing to monitor any other potential Bears transactions that may cross. But that's not why you called. MLB Food Fest is going to be Saturday, April 21st and Sunday, April 22nd. There's going to be a gathering. The teams in MLB will all be represented at Bryant Park in Manhattan, and each team will be serving one signature item. This is like one of those things on Top Chef.
Yeah, it's exactly.
You know, when Padma Lakshmi comes out and says, you know, you're going to
be. Give me your knives. Pack up your knives. You're
right. You're going to be serving this item, and you got to cook this over a campfire, and Eric Repair is going to eat it. And
then ingredient is a cup of Don Cooper's spit.
See, now I'm now
the tobacco
I'm,
juice now and I'm, the seeds left over from out. Last night's dugout.
No, but now I'm back to Chris Ranji's Don Cooper stories.
They're all true. It's unbelievable. Every single one of them.
I know.
Every single
I
one
know.
Of them.
My favorite would be running the board for Sox games, and Ranji would have me play which soup is Coop eating during the pregame interview.
It's not that. He said that Don Cooper would sit down.
Yes.
At a table.
Mm-hmm. We've already forgotten a very important point here.
Where other people had been eating.
That's right.
And left food there.
That's right.
And he would simply sit down and begin
well,
eating.
Well, listen, let's not impugn track of grazing, okay? It's one thing to go through and just pick the rest.
It's not a buffet. Right. It's left. It's other people's garbage.
Here's the thing you're missing.
It's one thing if it's your kid. You're allowed to do it if it's your kid and there's a half a cookie.
That's the allowable.
Yeah, it's your kid. It's your flesh and blood, but it's some schmo there.
You're missing a descriptor.
Left fries.
You're missing a descriptor.
What?
And it's pantsless.
Yeah, I know. I've heard those stories too about when they bring the bin over.
Oh, it's amazing.
I can't go much further than that.
But. Honest to God, you have to respect a man who is that damn comfortable.
Yeah, that's the Barry Rosner theory, is after a certain point, you just don't need to have pants on. And you don't have to, but
mm-mm.
He does not care.
You think?
No, I'd rather not, actually. So these are the food items that are going to be represented at MLB Food Fest. And it says, this the word that bothers me in the headline, at MLB.com, the headline is the major's wildest ballpark concoctions.
Just crazy stuff.
Wacky and wild.
Can't believe you sell this at a ballpark.
Right. So the Orioles have Chesapeake waffle fries.
Yeah.
Red Sox New England lobster rolls.
Sure.
The Indians flamethrower.
Right.
I don't know what a flamethrower
no idea.
Food item is. I'm
it's
sure.
A pulled pork sandwich. I looked it up.
Thank you. And I'm sure it's spicy.
Eh? Yeah, there's jalapenos on there.
Thank you.
Oh. The
Tigers chicken shawarma nachos. Large Muslim population in Detroit, so that would certainly make sense. The Astros serve a chicken waffle cone, if you're into that whole juxtaposition.
Have you been to the Juice Box, Minute Maid?
No.
They've got some stuff.
Okay.
They've got some crazy, crazy foods out there.
Kansas City Royals brisket acho. Based, I don't know if it's a nacho. Probably nachos.
Sam's brother.
The Angels Japanese pork katsu. The Twins are doing a... What the hell is that?
I don't know what that is.
Curd
I don't
marchuk?
Know what that is.
K-U-R-D-M-A-R-C-Z-U-K. Curd. It's probably a cheese curd something. They have walleye on a stick there, too. Why not that?
Yeah, no, that's the state fair. Curds aren't necessarily. Okay. They got the Juicy Lucy but kind of thing.
This is curds with a K, so maybe it's something Kurdish.
It is cheese curds with Polish sausage.
Ooh.
Done.
I like it.
Beautiful. I like both of those things.
I'm beautiful. In. The Yankees will be represented by Adobo Bao. The Athletics, the Monte Crush Davis Cristo. A Monte Cristo, which I...
With a player's name slammed into them.
I believe, if I remember, a Monte Cristo from Goodman's in Highland Park was a... It was a ham and cheese sandwich that was breaded... And deep fried.
Is that the one with the Thousand Island
on French
as well?
Toast? No, that's a Reuben.
That's the Reuben
with Russian dressing, technically. But yeah. It was, yeah. That's I believe that's what Monte Cristo is. My favorite is in here too. The Seattle Mariners is my personal favorite, and one we've talked about before on these airwaves. Toasted grasshoppers.
Yeah, you're big into the whole fried insect thing, aren't you?
It will save the world. We should all be eating more insects. For environmental reasons, for protein reasons, we should all.
You drinking Soylent too? Are you in on that?
Soylent Green is people. No, it's really important that people embrace the eating of insects and learn to love it because it could solve a lot of problems.
I will let you die on that hill.
So popular, they had to ration them. When they first did it, you had to get a ticket.
In Seattle.
You're kidding. They ran out so fast that they had to be rationed. Tampa's going to do a Reuben Cuban. All right. The Rangers, chicken and donuts. The Blue Jays, big smoke jerk chicken nachos. And the White Sox will be represented by the Southside Horseshoe. That's a bunch of meat on a piece of bread, right?
Yeah, I believe it is. So it's just a giant, giant sandwich.
I think it's like Texas toast and fries thrown on it.
Best thing they had last season was the mac and cheese brisket sandwich all slided in together. It was beautiful.
Your NL representatives, and this is, again, wildest, okay?
Crazy. Out of the box.
The D-backs with a churro dog. The Braves have a pig pickin'. The Reds with a fry box. As long as it's not Skyline Chili and then everybody gets diarrhea.
This stuff's disgusting. But I don't know what a fry box is.
I don't know. If that's a box of fries, not wild. The Rockies, Helton Burger and Fries. Dodgers, Chito Lote. Which sounds like elotes and Cheetos. Again, in for that.
Winner.
Miami, a bacon-wrapped plantain. The Brewers, cheddar beer brat. Nah. The Mets, New York deli pastrami. This is not wild.
No, this is the NL is kind of lame.
NL's lame. Phillies, Bulls barbecue slider. Pirates of the pulled pork pierogi hoagie. Padres are serving Seaside Market's tri-tip nachos. The Giants... Crazy crab sandwich. Cardinals with, is it Gioia's hot salami sandwich? If it's St. Louis, it sucks because all the food there sucks.
By definition. So like even the barbecue there, they got a couple of joints. Nothing.
St. Louis barbecue? No, the food there is horrible.
No.
And the Nationals will have a crab grilled cheese. The Chicago Cubs will be represented by a Chicago-style hot dog.
Hooray.
Are they zagging where others have zigged? Are they too cool for
the
room?
They found the market inefficiency in MLB Food Fest. Kidding me?
Theo's actually figured out. Like,
here's what we do, guys. Here's pickle, tomato, sport peppers, the whole thing. We do it.
It's like when
all it takes.
Everybody else is going launch angle and we're going to go contact, or everybody else is throwing low in the zone trying to deuce ground balls. We're going to throw up in the zone. The Cubs have realized everybody else is going wacky. We're going to go classic.
This won't cost us anything. We send it over there. People like it.
Have you seen their condiments above replacement?
Right. That's what I mean. This seems to be like the Cubs trying to be too cool and outsmart the room. It's whoever is in charge, where Theo's like, how are we going to do this? They've had like 15 meetings. There's no wrong answers. You know, we're just brainstorming here.
I don't know. I mean, you might come up short to big smoke jerk chicken nachos.
I don't know.
The Toronto Blue Jays.
I don't know how they're going to decide what's good and what's not. If people are just going to vote with their feet, if it's like a caucus style thing where they see where the crowds are going.
Most food consumed immediately wins. She's going to weigh it in afterward.
I don't know. All right, fats. What do you think?
Tally up.
Toronto is a screaming, like, that's just screaming to me right now.
Yeah, it's one of the ones I start as well
big
on this
smoke
list.
Smoke jerk chicken nachos.
There are no bad words.
Because a lot of that is the way the words are together.
There's a lot of creative things I would try, but if I want a sure thing, I'm going with those for sure. And the chicken waffle cone is intriguing as well.
Mr. Pouty Pants says the NL's lame crazy foods are just as lame as the pitcher hitting. So apparently that's the equivalent. And we're finding out that the Cincinnati Fry Box from the 206.
Yeah.
The Fry Box is buffalo chicken on a baked potato. That doesn't make any sense. Why is it called a Fry Box?
I have no idea, but you can put buffalo chicken on anything and I'll probably eat it. I'm a buffalo sauce on just, I'm sold.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the Rockies didn't go with the Rocky Mountain oysters. That's a good point. They didn't
probably
do that.
Probably safe.
No. I've never had those, but would definitely try them because Andrew Zimmern loves himself.
You got to eat weird stuff.
Yeah, every kind of testicle you serve Andrew Zimmern, he's in. And he always describes the richness and creaminess.
Mm.
So, hey, look, why not? This segment sponsored by CeCe's. New crust, new sauce, New York-style pizza. Now at CeCe's, grab an extra-large slice of their new meatball pepperoni pizza and new cheesecake brownies for dessert. There's just so much to love in the buffet. For just $5 and change, only at CeCe's. Prices vary. Restrictions apply.
I have something to ask you about where the free agent class, at least so far as it stands for the Bears, whether it affects the draft for you at all and what your thought process is there when we come back after a break here. I don't know. I've just kind of been looking at either the Prince of Mukamura signing. We heard that in the update a little while ago, I think at 11. And it's just got me thinking about exactly where and what.
Amukamara.
Yeah.
Amukamara.
What did I say?
Amakamura.
Amakamura.
Amukamara.
Amakahaka.
Prince Amukamara.
That's what I said.
I knew this was going to happen. I thought as soon as they re-signed him, I knew that this was just going to be more people mispronouncing Prince Amukamara's last name.
You know that was the first thing tweeted at me last night.
Was it?
Yes.
That you had to do it on purpose?
That's right.
Just to... Okay, well, that's
great. I'm dinging the bell.
I'm glad everybody's already lined
you feel good?
Up in that, for that.
Are you happy?
But the other question is, I love the idea of Chase Daniel as backup quarterback, but I want to know where that fits in with my general rule of thumb that actually did not hold true last year, but the idea of all quarterbacks play. That we have learned that in Bears seasons, no matter how you lay them out, all quarterbacks play. He doesn't play.
No, I mean, hasn't at all.
You may sign him as a terrific backup quarterback, but then we heard the name Jonathan Quinn invoked earlier. Do you have any confidence that he's a get you out of a game guy or get you through a 3-game stretch guy?
No, but does that matter at this point?
I don't know.
Is that a question? Is the learning of the offense, is the understanding Matt Nagy's system at this point more important than getting out of a game with a backup Chase Daniel? Because to me, I don't think it matters all that much. I mean, look at where they're at and look at who they're. So they're signing upside guys as is.
Yeah, watch it not matter until it matters.
Playing for that future.
Yeah,
well,
that would be the season where all of a sudden you start out 5-3 and you think, ooh,
hey,
boy.
Got a chance.
And then Mitchell turns an ankle and it's a high ankle sprain and he's out for 3 weeks. And you say, Chase, here you go. You can add to that one touchdown total you have. I don't know. So we'll answer that question and more. 312-644-6767. Bernstein and McKnight on the score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Busy Bears make a bunch of moves, and it's all been offense. You get a tight end. You get two wide receivers. You get a kicker. And today they add a backup quarterback. So that leads you to what conclusions?
I have some questions about what may happen in the draft, given what our first couple moments of free agency have looked like, Dan. So you get Prince Amukamara back on a 3-year deal.
Right.
We had Biggs on with Mullane Hanley earlier this morning talking that contract over. You've got Kyle Fuller on the transition tag, right? So theoretically, you're two.
And the market sounds...
Cornerbacks are...
Yeah, the market appears like it's going to be amenable to a long-term deal with Kyle Fuller.
Yeah, that's what it looks like.
Yeah, we're going to talk to Greg Gabriel about that at noon, by the way, about all this stuff, but how this all fits together.
So my question is this, and I don't know, we haven't talked about the draft and what kind of thoughts you have on the 8th pick and what kind of value it might have to Ryan Pace at this point in putting things together, but there's a dude who may be there at that point. And listen, I like Prince... I don't know that the takeaways have necessarily happened for him. I like Kyle. I don't know the takeaways. I need to have the ball back if I'm a defense in this NFL. Mm-hmm. I need to get it back. Denzel Ward out of Ohio State is absolutely ridiculous. I loved him coming out of Ohio State. I think he's going to be right there around the 8 spot, possibly when the Bears pick, maybe a little bit later. I think he's by a lot of places rated the top cornerback in the draft. And I know you've got veterans at that point with, you know, Fuller and with Amukamara, but I don't know that you've done enough to necessarily reroute what you might be thinking with the 8 pick in draft. I would imagine that the plan is set regardless of where free agency goes from here. But I really do like to entertain the idea of trading back because I want more.
I am. I don't know exactly when the right time is strategically to get the most value from that pick. And this is all stuff for Greg Gabriel, who's going to have more of an expert's thought on some of this. But there's varying opinions on where the depth, where the break is, where the actual drop off, the shelf of this
draft.
You
mean like the top 10, top 12,
maybe
top
not
15,
even maybe top
is.
6, mm-hmm. and where and what that 8 can get you. And are you increasing value if you go to the Bills and because they moved up, right? They have 12 now.
Yes.
And they may want to climb again because they had 21 and 22, I think, and then they flip one of those for 12. And there are teams that are looking to keep climbing, and I am listening. I am listening. But I agree with you about Ward. Ward's the truth.
I'm a big fan. And I just want to, you know, you mentioned that tier of first round type guys. It always seems every year there is a very, or at least pretty definable tier of top talent, whether it's at 12, whether it's 15, whether it drops off at 8. Or what have you. But as you evaluate these things, I'm with you in that you have to find out where that drop off is and get, you know, equal or concurrent value back for wherever, however far back you want to go.
I am going to take the first phone call ever to the Bernstein and McKnight show. It is Mark and Schaumburg on the Score. You're the first, Mark.
Oh, wow. I feel honored. Holy cow. Congratulations, Connor. I know it's been a long road for you since the Score Search, so congratulations. Welcome
thanks,
back
man.
To Chicago.
Appreciate it. Been here.
Dan, to elaborate on your point with Daniels, does he help the Bears get closer to winning the championship? And if you look at the quarterback landscape, and you've got, you know, Connor, when you said Case Keenum and Foles kind of ruined the perception of the backup, you've got these backups now being signed as starters. So it's already thin as backups to begin with. So, Dan, I'll ask you this question. What would be better, bringing in a backup that knows the system, knows what's going on in the room, that could help groom this quarterback that we've invested heavily in so he can be better learning this new offense, or bringing in another quarterback who, you know, is more proven, more game, you know, who could probably win you a game or two, but doesn't know anything? So you're teaching two quarterbacks.
I think that's a really easy answer. If you're asking the question like that, it's obvious that it has to be all about the quarterback that matters.
Mitch.
That's it.
All Mitch.
That's it. I mean, look what's going on. Everything with this team, every single thing that they're doing, every move is based around Ryan Pace's gamble on Mitch Trubisky. Remember the phrase he used after he made the move?
Which one in particular?
All in.
Oh, sure.
We're all in, guys. Guys, we are all in.
Was Stoked invoked as well?
I don't know if we heard Stoked
in that press conference.
I'm so excited, and we're all in. He's proving it.
Well, he has to.
Every single thing is to prop up the probability that Mitchell Trubisky is good, or at least to make sure he's not bad.
That's the thesis statement he made. That's what Pace is going to make his money on here, is that Mitchell Trubisky is the guy for the Bears going forward. And I, you know, to that end, we haven't talked a whole lot about Trey Burton and that signing. We did a little bit with Mike Florio early on, but I've always been of the opinion that young quarterbacks, and I think Trubisky is in this situation again, coming into a brand new offense, or one that he's, you know, somewhat familiar with, but will be new. They seem to love tight ends, right? Safety valves, guys who are open underneath, guys who can stretch the field horizontally just a little bit and give them that next read back, so that, you know, you don't want your quarterback to go, I can't throw the ball down the field because I can't turn it over. You saw what happened when Kirk Cousins finally got that out of his head and finally pushed the ball downfield. He got a whole boatload of money from the Vikings, whether
there was
you think he's good or not.
Great piece on The Ringer about the curse of efficiency, where what has happened.
I think I read that.
What has happened is it's the Brian Hoyerizing of the NFL, where everybody is, and or Bradford is another guy who's setting records for completion percentage.
It's Captain Checkdown.
When everybody's so hung up on the efficiency of the passing game and the lack of mistakes that they lose sight of the scoring of points and the making of big plays. And when we talk about the old NFL, the old swashbuckling NFL,
right.
look at Terry Bradshaw's numbers and look at some of these guys that people didn't care about interceptions. And you wonder, it's sort of like baseball realizing that a strikeout is just another out. I wonder at some point if an NFL team is going to say, hey, you know what? We're going to throw a pick. We'll get the ball back and we're going to score a touchdown. We're going to chuck it down the field. We're seeing a little bit with going for it on fourth down.
There's something that might change that aspect of the NFL, though, this coming season.
Talking about the way they change the defensive rules?
Absolutely.
Sure. I'm hopeful that the NFL is, and coaches NFL become a little less fearful in general, because the punting on fourth and one is dumb.
Oh, I see. Fearful in risk-taking and being a little more forward with it.
Sure. In the risk calculus, and some of that in the passing game, that you get these guys that drill it into these quarterbacks' heads, that when in doubt, don't. When in doubt, no. When in doubt, no.
Yeah.
And sometimes they think, hey, let me make a play. You know, let me take a shot. That guy might be able to throw him open, and if it's tipped and I throw a bad pick, you know, don't kill me for it.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
We've been tracking possible landing spots for former Packers wideout Jordy Nelson. Adam Schefter is tweeting that Jordy Nelson is visiting the Raiders today, then scheduled to visit the Seahawks, and then the Saints.
Saw something put together. I think it was on Instagram about John Gruden and his effusive praise for Jordy Nelson.
Effusive praise for everything.
Well, yeah, absolutely everything.
Effusive praise for his bowl of cereal.
Even for Nelson, he was going over the top. Or for himself, he was going over the top for a guy like Jordy Nelson. I think the Bears aren't in that position at, what is he, 32 going on 33? And his knees and elbows are probably falling apart. I still think he's worth a flyer if you're one of the correct teams in that position to do it. Because you can't tell me, a lot of people, I don't know where you stand on Jimmy Graham heading to the Packers and whether what he's got left, or if 10 touchdowns last year, all of them in the red zone and kind of losing his efficiency in between the 20s.
And he's never blocked.
Never. Blocked at all. He's kind of like Adam Shaheen that way in his rookie season.
No, but Shaheen was not bad. I disagree.
Seriously?
I disagree. I think the one thing that Shaheen did consistently was block. It was the getting open and catching passes thing. I don't mind him as a blocker.
Okay, well, you got to do the getting open and catching passes thing.
Well, that's what they said when we watched it. We didn't watch highlights of him blocking it.
I got kind of tricked then by their own pumping up the skill set, I suppose.
I don't know. I don't know the level to which they were exactly aware of what was going to play at the NFL level right. For a guy coming out of Division II, but he fits with the new guy. He fits with Burton.
So back to the Nelson thing and the Graham thing. You get crafty veteran, and I wouldn't necessarily put Jimmy Graham in that case right now, but maybe Jordy Nelson. You put that guy with the right quarterback, with a quarterback who knows how to make throws inside the 20 like that, I think you can still somehow generate a weapon a little bit. I'm not saying Nelson at his prime or anything like that. I'm just saying, worth maybe taking a flyer.
If you're the Patriots, if you're one of those teams close, sure.
I mean, even if you're the Raiders for that point.
Yeah, well, Gruden did say that he wanted to set football back 20 years and just maybe set it back 7.
Hooray!
Did you hear that press conference? It was really strange.
I did not hear the Gruden one, no.
Very, very strange, talking about the way he coaches the team. And it wasn't just one of these sort of meathead anti-analytics rants. It was about the tools that they use and about the way they talk to each other.
The tools that they use to evaluate players?
Yeah, it was a lot of strain. Because I want to take it back to 1995, which surprised me because
it's not the game.
And he's been around. Playing. It's not as if the guy has just been on a golf course.
He's had the best seat in the house for how the game has evolved.
And he interviews coaches and players every week. He has guys come into his quarterback school, and he's a guy who says he keeps a playbook. Even when he wasn't coaching, he said, I'm gonna take that play. I'm going to put that in my playbook. And he still said he wants to have an actively Luddite approach to coaching his team. Good luck to him.
It feels, I don't know. I'm judging the guy based on, you know, a couple of broadcasts every season. And, you know, it feels to me like that's putting it out there for bait.
815 says Bruce Arians would be one of your contrarian coaches regarding efficiency. He always wanted to go down the field as much as possible. In his relatively recent book, He uses the phrase, no risk it, no biscuit. That phrase is all over the place. Risk it. I don't know what the kids are using it. Like at hockey practice, they were yelling it the other day, risk it for a biscuit.
Okay.
It's some dare now. I don't know. It's so funny that somebody actually pointed that out, because I was asking my kid the other day, saying, what's all this risk it for a biscuit crap?
There definitely are coaches who are willing to push things downfield, but I think there's a difference between coaches who are allowing quarterbacks to go downfield with weapons that they deem appropriate to do so versus going for it on a 4th-and-1 and putting the punter away. There's a different mitigation of risk there, because that decision that you go downfield and that decision looks like it's made by a lot of people.
Right.
You decide to go for it on 4th-and-1 and that decision is held by one person.
Yeah, that's owned by the coach, no matter what happens.
Absolutely owned by the coach, and that is absolutely going to be something that he has to answer in an exit interview at some point.
This segment brought to you by Credit Karma. Get your truly free credit score and free credit monitoring from Credit Karma. Download the Credit Karma app today. Credit Karma, get knowing. You want to know more about the NCAA tournament, college basketball, the way everything is setting up for tomorrow, and you're going to want to keep it here. Tim Doyle has it for you next on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
One of the simple pleasures in life and all of earthly existence is talking to Tim Doyle about the NCAA tournament. Yeah, I said it. It's true. It's a very specific thing, but it's true.
And highly specific.
Tim Doyle is on Twitter at TimDoyle00. He is a host at Stadium Sports, and he is on the Bernstein and McKnight Show on The Score. How you doing, Tim?
I'm doing fantastic. Congratulations to you two guys on your new show. I just wonder, Dan, you know, you've had a couple of partners now. Do you have sort of an initiation that you do? Is it like a tandem bike ride on Lakeshore Drive? Is it maybe seeing your partner naked in a locker room? Is there something you do that maybe brings you two guys together as radio hosts?
Yeah, I make him drink an entire pint of Fireball. That's pretty much
it. Oh, perfect. Good. I feel right at home.
All in one shot.
Excellent. But,
he does that anyway. So for Connor, that's called Thursday.
Yep.
So your first blush when you saw the pairings and you see what now has changed because of a key injury to Virginia, does that change your outlook on the tournament with that information now?
I think that's an excellent question, because DeAndre Hunter's a guy who can score. And when you talk about Virginia, right, he's the fourth leading scorer, nearly 10 points a game, and he's probably their best pro prospect as well. I'm not a Virginia guy. And I do think that there's going to be this mental block for them at some point during the tournament that they go, oh, we're Virginia. We're not supposed to be here. I mean, Tony Bennett's been there 9 years. He's never been to a Final Four. And I know statistically, if you go inside the numbers, this is a different Virginia team, and 31-2, and they've had an outstanding year, no doubt about it. But how could you jump on a bandwagon when it just seems like there seems to be this huge mental hurdle for them, and if they fall behind, you know that whatever crowd environment they're in, whether they're in Charlotte or Atlanta in the South bracket, that everyone's going to be rooting against them in the crowd, because that's what happens at tournaments, right? You always root against the number one seed in your respective region, and all right. of a sudden, they don't score buckets in bunches. They don't have that spurt ability. So my big fear with them is, if they fall behind, how are they going to be able to come back? Saying all of that, I do think they advance to the final in the South region, and they lose in a bloodbath to Cincinnati. That might be a game that's 42-40, but I think Cincinnati matches up very well with Virginia.
I was looking at that part of the bracket, Tim. I'm glad you brought it up. I mean, whether it's Cincy or Tennessee or even Arizona to a point, Virginia, I mean, some of those teams there, and really some of the top seeds across the bracket seem to make their living defensively. Is that something different in this tournament as opposed to some others, or is that just kind of where we're headed in college basketball with not as many shot makers as we used to see?
Yeah, I think that defense travels, and I think that college coaching, the coaches at that level want to have complete control. Have you ever watched a college basketball game where they get a 2-for-1? Like, that drives me completely insane. Like, when there's 52 seconds left, like, just come down, get a good look, shoot it, because then you're going to get the ball again. Mathematically, you could potentially score 6 points. Like, nobody does that in college basketball. Obviously, they do it at the NBA level. Why they don't do that in college basketball is because the coaches want complete, utter control over all of their players. They almost treat them
like robots. They don't want to give them any freedom at all. They want to say, all right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to come down. We're going to do this, 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 and this. It's like, you know, they kind of took the fun out of the game. I'll give you a team that's fun to watch called a bunch of their games, and you're going to know their style is Marshall. Now, I don't love their matchup against Wichita State, but Marshall's head coach is Dan D'Antoni, Mike D'Antoni's brother. And they play a really exciting brand of basketball where they may shoot 35 threes in a college game. They have two electrifying guards in John Elmore and C.J. Burks. So that's a team that could score in bunches, as well as Murray State. I love Murray State. Their matchup against West Virginia, if you go through Bob Huggins, he either wins two games because they're so hard to prepare for on short rest because of that pressure, or they lose in the first round. And Murray State has two pro guards in the backcourt. Jonathan Stark is a guy who's kind of a Kemba Walker-type player, and John Morant, only a freshman, had a triple-double earlier this year against Eastern Illinois. But most people don't know about Murray State. If you've ever driven to Murray, Kentucky, there's points in that drive where you just go, I should just drive off the road because it's in the middle of nowhere. But they are the perfect matchup for West Virginia. And anybody who's not giving you double-digit seeds that aren't going to advance far didn't watch college basketball at all this year, because there's been so much parity and so much turnover that on a neutral site, anybody could beat anybody on any given night.
You mentioned the game between Wichita State and Marshall. I believe I read that it's the first time in tournament history that one school is playing a team coached by a man whose last name is the same name as their school, with Greg Marshall coaching against Marshall. And I can't believe it hasn't happened before. It's somebody named Howard or somebody named Davidson or something. It hasn't happened, but I guess it has not. And you invoked Kemba Walker, and it's the second time I've heard his name come up as a comp, because Colin Sexton is that guy. Anytime you hear the Kemba Walker comps, they say it's the same kind of player.
I get a chance to call the Alabama versus Minnesota game, where Alabama played 3-on-5 the last 10 minutes of the game in Brooklyn, and it was utter chaos. And he basically carried the team. They were down 14 points, and I'm saying on the broadcast, they need to wave the white flag, that they need to just, you know, Avery Johnson's got to give up on this game. What did I know? Because I'd never seen 3-on-5 before. And Sexton goes nuts and starts scoring all types of baskets from a lot of different angles. You know, the comparison with him, I heard Russell Westbrook, and I can see that a little bit from an explosion north and south. I don't think he has that same elevation off the ground as a Westbrook, but I could see kind of similar body types. And, you know, he's going to be a one-and-done type player. They play Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech's had some great wins this year, most of them coming on their home floor. The 8-9 games are all toss-ups. I think they did a nice job of kind of scheduling those, but this is, you know, one of the rare times in tournament history, Connor and Dave and Dan, that
and Dave.
You know, also, sorry, Dave. Dan, Dave. Who's the better?
I'm Dave.
Yeah. That every higher seed is the favorite. Crazy to think that every game the higher seed is the favorite in this year's tournament. So, you know, it's the time of year that's fun. The Philadelphia brackets.
Highest seed in the Big Ten is Purdue at number 2. They've got the bigs, and they were able to kind of just punch their way through a Big Ten schedule. Do they have the guards that are necessary in the tournament at this point?
You know, the way they shot it in January was, I think, enough evidence for me that the two Edwardses and Matthias, that they're able to stretch the floor enough, because their strength is clearly on the inside with a guy like Isaac Haas. I mean, when you have a guy that's 7'3" and could score down low, you know, are you going to have enough perimeter scoring to keep the defense honest? I don't know if they're the same team now that they were in January, because they were playing so well at that point. And also, when you start diving inside the Big Ten, was the conference really that good this year? And, you know, I've seen teams kind of peak too early in the year. I still have them advancing all the way to the final of the East, where they'd match up with Villanova. But I thought at one time when I was watching them that they were legit national championship contenders. They made 20-plus threes against Iowa, and I was like, well, this team's really good. And now I think that certainly they could make a run. If they went to the Final Four, I wouldn't be surprised, but I'd be surprised if they went out and won the whole thing.
From what I've been seeing, just cursory glances at the various supposed experts, the region that seems to have the most potential volatility is the West. And you look at the number of different teams. Some people love Gonzaga. Some love Michigan. You've got North Carolina in there. You've got Xavier in there. Missouri gets Michael Porter Jr. back and now is unpredictable, even though they're going to be missing one of their top players for their first game because of a DUI arrest. But do you agree that that may be the most unpredictable of the four?
I would say that's a safe bet. You know, I have both South Dakota State and San Diego State, them advancing their higher seeds. You know, Xavier's a team that obviously Chris Mack made the decision to come back to go chase a national championship. And, you know, he's going to be one of the highly sought after coaches in college basketball, especially who knows what's going to go on this offseason with all the black cloud that's hanging over this NCAA tournament right now. But, you know, if Xavier does not shoot it well, then anything could happen. I think there's a lot of storylines there. Obviously, Michael Porter Jr. took 17 shots, only had 13 points in his, what we would call his college debut, only played a few minutes opening night. And you just wonder, if he's at his best, you know, could he put Missouri on his back? Because when I talked to NBA scouts, the comparison they used with Porter Jr. is Kevin Durant. I mean, you just don't throw that out there. So he could score in a lot of different ways. I think that could be an interesting Cinderella story there if Missouri knocks off Xavier. I'm really high on Gonzaga. I think some seasons Gonzaga is overrated and maybe gets a little bit too much love. This year they've flown well below the radar, and when you start diving inside their numbers and you watch them play, six guys for a majority of the season were averaging double figures. And when you watch college basketball, even if you're a casual fan, you sort of kind of know after watching a few minutes who's going to get the ball and who's going to score, right? It's normally the same guys, especially at the end of the shot clock, that's going to get the ball and kind of make those plays. When you watch Gonzaga, you don't know who their best player is. They have that much talent and balance, and the fact that they're in a region, which, Dan, you said that there's a lot of volatility, I agree. I actually have Gonzaga winning that West region, so I don't like Xavier. I think they're going to have to shoot the ball extremely well and be sort of hot to make a run to the Final Four. So I got Gonzaga coming out of the West.
Talking with Tim Doyle of Stadium Sports about the NCAA tournament here on Bernstein and McKnight. What about Loyola? We heard coming back from the break, just to bring you in, a lot of people are up on the 11 seed. I love that they shoot 40% from three and are 23rd in adjusted defense. I'm a fan. Do you think they make a run?
Yeah, I think they make a run. I think it's a safe bet that they knock off Miami. Miami had some injuries as well. This is just a favorable matchup for Loyola. And then I got a chance to see Wright State. I think Wright State's going to give Tennessee all they could handle in that game. I think Tennessee's just a little bit too athletic. But I think this is actually a good matchup for Loyola because Loyola does all the little things. They're such a throwback-type team as far as, you know, don't shoot themselves in the foot, make the extra pass. They kind of play like old-school type of basketball. And, you know, Porter Moser's Rick Majerus' disciple. And, you know, you go back to those Majerus teams, took care of the basketball, did all the little things. So I think for Loyola to lose, they just have to have one of those days where they shoot 33% from the field and they're not making open shots. I've been so impressed with them all season long. Now, Florida wasn't the team that we expected them to be, but when Florida's right, Florida can beat anybody on any given night. Granted, they went down to Lexington and knocked off Kentucky in Rupp Arena. And they went down to Florida and kind of beat up on the Gators. I know they held on life and death at the end of the game, but they were actually the better team when I went back and watched on film. So I have Loyola not winning one game. I have Loyola winning two games. And enjoy Porter Moser up there on Lakeshore Drive because I believe this will be his last season as the coach of the Ramblers.
Good stuff from Tim Doyle as always. Thanks, man. We appreciate it.
Guys, good luck on the show. And Dan, I think you got to come up with a better thing for your new partner than just
too easy, right?
Too easy. I'll figure it out. That is Tim Doyle of Stadium Sports. We also have a big thank you to Buffalo Wild Wings.
And yes.
Buffalo Wild Wings at 7111 South Kingery Highway in Willowbrook is going to be a place for a Friday Dos Equis watch party from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. The College Hoops watch party with a score in Dos Equis. You can enjoy the tournament with your buddies, take home some cool prizes from the promo team, and celebrate with an ice-cold Dos Equis. So we are enjoying some hot Buffalo Wild Wings at the moment right here at Sports Radio 670, where caller 6 to the Scores contest line at 312-591-6700 win $670 in cash, courtesy of the Bernstein and McKnight Show. Never let it be said we didn't do anything for you.
And take all of it to Buffalo Wild Wings and spend it on the tournament.
We've got Bears talk for you and NFL talk, more Bears specific with Greg Gabriel of Pro Football Weekly. That is coming up. Don't go anywhere. You got the score.